It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Tigers time on offense. Three receivers to the left, including Lacy, Anderson, and Thomas. Single back in Josh Williams. Now they'll motion Lacy back to the right side of the formation. Here's the snap. Pump fake by Nussmeier. He's going to throw towards the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Fighting Tigers! Tigers win! Tigers win! In the right corner of the end zone. 25-yard strike to Kyron Lacy. And the Tigers indeed walk it off here at Tiger Stadium with a 29-26 victory in overtime. And now the students have stormed the field. LSU trailed the entire game, tied the contest with under a minute to play. And on the first play of scrimmage in overtime for LSU, Garrett Nussmeier hits Kyron Lacy. And Ole Miss heads back to Oxford with the L.
Goosebumps. I don't know about you, but I just got goosebumps all over again. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman, and that man who you just heard, Chris Blair, the voice of your LSU Tigers, joins us live here on WWL. Do you give yourself goosebumps?
No, but it was a nerve-wracking night, as anybody who was there, anybody watching or listening. I mean, it was that last minute of the regular fourth quarter and then overtime. I mean, what a night. I mean,
yeah. Great call, you know, was fantastically well done, and we appreciate hearing you here on WWL and the LSU Sports Radio Network because, what a crazy night. You know, Tommy Tucker asked me this morning, he said, do you like games like that are nip and tuck, back and forth, nail biters, edge of your seat? And I said, absolutely. I love it. And then, you know, especially when my team wins. Tommy said, I'd rather have a blowout from the beginning. But that really was an amazing night to celebrate the 100th anniversary of football in Tiger Stadium and really an opportunity for us to feel really excited about this Tiger team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, we talked on late last week. I mean, this is kind of the first of, seven SEC games to finish the season. So there's some big ones coming up. But, you know, it's the players say it all the time. Coaches say it all the time, Dave. And, you know, as fans and those who follow the team and love this team, it's hard to do that. But that's how you have to do it because they got to get back up this week, go out on the road, take an Arkansas team that, you know, this matchup is interesting to me. Because I think Arkansas feels like they didn't get a lot of love, a lot of respect preseason based on last season. They defeated Tennessee at home, week before last. And, you know, people said, okay, is that a one-off? Tennessee has struggled historically up there. What does that really mean? So, you know, LSU needed this Ole Miss win to get legitimate for, I think, the rest of the college football world. And I think for Arkansas, that's their motivation, is that now they can build that for their resume with LSU coming up there next week. So, you know, I'm sure we'll hear Coach Kelly say it coming up at noon in his weekly press conference that they enjoyed Saturday night. They probably got to work Sunday. The guys got to enjoy it a little bit more, but they'll get back to work starting today.
You know, I think that's an interesting perspective you tell when looking at it through the eyes of the Hogs, is the fact that LSU has been ranked since the preseason polls, but had not had an opportunity, particularly after that USC game yet, to prove it. And Arkansas feels like they want to prove they deserve to be ranked while they haven't been. And you start to look at Ole Miss and go, wait a minute, though, they didn't beat any ranked teams yet this season. LSU was the first ranked team they faced, and they lost in overtime. So I think there still are questions out there about LSU, and hopefully those will start to be answered even more clearly at Arkansas, and then with Texas A&M, and then with, obviously, with Alabama.
No question. I mean, you know, Arkansas is going to be fired up for this game. They always are. It's one of the teams, I think, that sticks in the crawl of Razorback fans is the success of LSU, particularly in football. And, you know, they do battle for the Golden Boot. And, you know, I don't know how much people clamor for that year round, but when you play, even the Tigers, they want to keep that trophy in Baton Rouge. Obviously, Arkansas wants to keep it in Fayetteville. So, you know, there's a lot of storylines going into it, but you have to know going up there in the SEC, a road game is not easy. I mean, it's very difficult, in fact. And when you got a team that, again, has all the motivation in the world, on top of the Golden Boot, on top of bragging rights being a border state, on top of, you know, trying to legitimize what they've done up to this point, including defeating Tennessee, a top 10 team. I mean, they got all the motivation in the world. But I don't think there's a lack of motivation for LSU because, again, you've got the Arkansas game coming up on the road. Then you got to go to Texas A&M and play on the road. You get a bye week. Then you got Alabama coming in. You got Oklahoma. I mean, you got Vandy, who's, you know, winners of two straight now. So, you know, LSU's got plenty of motivation, too, and that's why I think it's going to be an interesting game, and that's why I'm glad it's at night. You know, the last couple of trips to Fayetteville has been the early start, but, you know, I think this is going to be an interesting game that a lot of eyeballs are going to want to watch.
Before we look too far ahead at that game, let's savor and enjoy what happened Saturday night in Death Valley. And it wasn't a perfect performance by any measurement by LSU, but when Garrett Nussmeier and the rest of the team needed to turn it on, to send it to overtime, and to win the game, it felt like they kicked it into another gear, and we were seeing really what we wanted to see throughout the game.
You know, I give a lot of credit to LSU's defense, and they've been much maligned this season, and frankly, deservedly so. They've gotten better each and every week. That certainly has been easy to see, but I think they put their best game together against a very good offense, obviously, in Ole Miss. But I think what they also set the tone for was the physicality of the game. And you can watch, you can go back and watch it now, and if you were watching Saturday, it really looked as though Ole Miss, as talented as they are, were a little gassed. The gas was running out of the tank late in that game. And I think that's credit to the defense, who, again, set that tone, but also the offensive line, who did a tremendous job against the nation's leading sack defense in Ole Miss, and they didn't give up any. And I think just the physicality for LSU outmatched Ole Miss. And that really goes to both sides of the football. And eventually, you know, LSU, and, you know, if you look at any great quarterback, I mean, depending on what generation you're from, you can talk Roger Staubach or Bart Starr, or, you know, Brett Favre or Joe Montana, you know, even the ones today, you know, they didn't always have their best game. But those great quarterbacks that we all remember from all those years are the ones that, even when it wasn't going well, you know, was able to put the last play behind them very quickly and look ahead at the task that they needed to go and do. To me, that's what was most impressive about Garrett Nussmeier. You know, and he was named SEC Offensive Player of the Week, deservedly so, just a few moments ago. Because when they needed him in that final, you know, 3 minutes, certainly in that final minute of regulation, you know, he delivered. And then he was like, hey, I'm done with this. Let's go. First play of scrimmage. You know, for those who've seen the social media clip from the Path, LSU's football documentary each year. I mean, Kyron Lacy says, get me the ball. This is the guy. Get me one-on-one with this guy and throw me the ball. And that's what they did. And one play, they walked it off. And, got a huge win and a night to remember at Tiger Stadium.
Absolutely. And then the fans rushed the field, and there'll be a, what, $250,000 fine for that. But I don't think anybody cared at the time because the celebratory feelings were just so overwhelming and everybody was having such a great time. And it really was so wonderful to have that feeling of, yes, this Tiger team is putting it together as they need to at the right time and right it as they head into this real tough stretch of games. And Arkansas, if they extended the top 25, they got enough votes to be 34th in the nation in the AP writers poll that came out yesterday. So there are obviously those who believe they belong in the top 25.
Well, they certainly would have an argument should they find a way to win on Saturday. I mean, back-to-back top 10 victories, LSU both number 8 in the AP and coaches poll after beating Ole Miss Saturday. So you go from beating Tennessee, go into the bye week, and then, you know, defend your home field again against LSU. I think they might get their wish.
What do we know about this what do we know about this Razorback team that LSU has to know and prepare for?
Well, it does appear that Bobby Petrino is very comfortable now for a second year being back in Fayetteville. And he's an excellent play caller. There's no denying that. And, you know, watching the game film from Tennessee and in that game, you know, they're not afraid of using two quarterbacks depending on the situation. You know, Green's kind of been the mainstay starter, but they can go to switch it up a little bit with a guy by the name of Malachi Singleton, who had the winning touchdown against Tennessee. You know, to seal the victory on that game two Saturdays ago. And, you know, he was named freshman, freshman of the week for his performance. So, you know, Petrino now, I think, feels comfortable with the weapons he has. They really attacked the middle of the field through the passing game against Tennessee. The Vols left the middle of the field open and, you know, easy for a guy like Petrino to see that. And they just hammered it, you know, and threw time and time again and got yards after catch. Defensively, they got after Tennessee and, you know, really had a lot of quarterback hurries, got a couple of sacks in that game. And again, when that place is rocking and their team's playing like that, it's a tough place to play like it is anywhere in the SEC. But, you know, I think it's a team that wants to keep the game low scoring. That's what they did to the Vols. And if you're LSU, the challenge is let's see if they can keep up with this point for point. And I think that's what it boils down to. And it's not all that different, really, than the last couple of matchups, but you go back to the last time LSU went to Fayetteville, you know, it took a miraculous effort with a team that I think on paper was head and shoulders better than the Razorbacks, and yet they won by, you know, the thinnest of margins. So, you know, I think the matchup that we were looking at the last 2 years in these last two meetings, I think it's pretty much the same, although the X factor of that is now you have a really established play caller that's maximizing everything he's got on that Razorback offense.
What would you like to see LSU build on from this Ole Miss victory heading up to Arkansas and looking ahead to, now they're not looking ahead, but we can, to Texas A&M and then Alabama with these three games that are just going to be so, so critical if they want to stay in the conversation for the playoffs. Personally, and I'm no expert, I'm just a passive observer, but man, I wish Garrett Nussmeier, when he's got 20 yards ahead of him and not a single defender paying any attention to him, could eat up some of that turf and have some of those huge positive gains. But he only seems to do that when he absolutely has to. So what would you like to see LSU build on as they head down this stretch?
Well, I don't disagree with you, although I am going to give Garrett a little credit that the one time he did run, he had a career-long 17 yards.
Yeah, and
so hopefully,
but it was only once, but it was great when it happened.
Hopefully, yeah, so hopefully he enjoyed that so much. We'll see that a little bit because I think, again, it's going to help with the running game. You know, right now, you know, defenses, and we saw Ole Miss do it a couple of times on that fourth down, you know, the zone read. I initially thought with Thomas, the receiver, we've seen that a bunch, the little shovel passes he motions. And they ran that motion pre-snap, but they decided to go to the zone read. Obviously, they gave it to Caleb Jackson, but because there was no respect for Nussmeier pulling and running, I mean, they just pinned their ears back and went right to the football and, of course, blew up that play. So I'd like to see that more, too. But I'm going to start on the defensive side, Dave. I think I want a continuation of what we saw defensively because whether Ole Miss wants to admit it or not, the truth is they got hit in the mouth, really from the word go. You think about how Ole Miss looked in that first quarter especially, but really the first half, as if really? We're only leading 10-0. We're only leading 10-7. And that's because the defense just kept swinging. And I think when they made contact, they made really strong contact. I mean, they got 6 sacks against this Ole Miss offensive line. And even when they didn't get the sack, you know, there were a couple of times where Dart took an absolute blasting as he released the football. And it just made things kind of clunky. And because of that, there were very few times in that game where Ole Miss was really moving. They were, you know, they're the second or sixth fastest team when it comes to plays offensively in the country. They're first in the SEC. I think it's like 22 seconds per snap. And they weren't able to do that a lot. And that was all because of the defense. And I gave Garrett his credit to Whit Weeks, 18 tackles, 10 solo, a sack, 2 tackles for loss. And he was the co-defensive player of the week in the SEC announced earlier today. But I think defensively, I think you go to Arkansas, if you set the tone you set against Ole Miss, and no disrespect to the Razorbacks, but they don't have quite the explosiveness that Ole Miss does. And if they can do that early to Arkansas, then it kind of starts putting some doubts in their head. And then I'll start talking offense, because if the defense does that, unlike what LSU did in the first half Saturday, they've got to give that complimentary football well before the final minute of regulation. Because if their defense can go in there and really slow Arkansas down and muddy it up, make things difficult, LSU's got to find themselves up 14-17-0 in the first half. I mean, that's doable if they get complimentary football from the get-go.
Yeah, and that I think a lot of fans would love to see. That was great Saturday night, and we're happy to come away with an overtime victory, but you don't want every week to come down to the final play in regulation or the end of regulation and then have to win it in overtime.
No, a couple of miraculous finishes a year are great for me. The rest, I'm good with a 40-point blowout every time.
And we're talking with Chris Blair, the voice of your LSU Tigers here on WWL, as the Tigers now are the 8th-ranked team in the nation in both the coaches and the writers polls, and face Arkansas, as we've been talking about, and then have to take on a currently 14th-ranked Texas A&M team before the bye, and then currently number 7 Alabama after that. And it doesn't get a whole lot easier. You got Florida following that, then Vanderbilt, which right now, if you extended it, would be the 26th ranked team in the nation before ending the regular season with Oklahoma. This is not going to be an easy stretch.
No, again, this is the first test of many that are coming up. And, you know, it's one of those deals where that opening game loss, while it's just one loss so far, you know, just limits how wide a margin of error you have. And then, you know, you get past the first of your bye weeks, and then you start this gauntlet. One game at home, 2 games on the road against very good teams who are playing with a lot of confidence right now. You go into the second bye week, and then you're going to take on Alabama, which, again, is Alabama the Alabama of last year or 5 years or 10 years ago? No, but they're still Alabama. So it doesn't get any easier, and it certainly won't this Saturday.
No, and I should mention that even Oklahoma got votes, 29, they'd be 29th if we extended it out. So really the only team that's not getting any votes for the top 25 that they have to face in these last 6 games is Florida. And wow, yeah, that's what you get for being in the SEC, particularly in the SEC West, right?
Yeah, that's just what it is now. I mean, this is the schedule. I mean, for years, you would look at a team schedule and go, well, I wonder who has the toughest in the SEC. And I have tried that exercise this year. And every time I find a team, I'm like, well, wait a minute, that's a pretty tough schedule, too. And, you know, it's like Kirby Smart said a couple of years ago, show him an easy SEC schedule. And there certainly isn't one this year.
No, there is not. But that means that we could have some amazing victories coming up down the road. And we know you'll be there for every play. Chris Blair, I know you got to run to lunch with the coach, so we'll let you do that. We appreciate you joining us here on WWL and look forward to talking to you after more big wins.
Oh, Dave, always a pleasure to be on the big one. Thank you so much. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Ball on the far side hash. They'll send Taylor wide to the right. Lacey in the slot to the right side. Anderson and Thomas out wide to the left. Williams, the running back, looking to help protect. Nope, now they're going to leak him out of the offensive backfield. It's Nussmeier with the snap. 4-man rush, throws. Anderson at the 1, into the end zone. Touchdown, Fighting Tigers. Hey now, 23-yard strike. Anderson got the call. He delivered.
And that's how the Tigers got where they needed to get to force an overtime. Went for one instead of trying to win it with two. We can talk about that decision. We'll also talk about the Saints after.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
This.
First and goal now at the 4. Mayfield to throw, does throw, quick slant, Chris Godwin, touchdown Buccaneers as he beat Alante Taylor just on a little 4-yard slant, middle of the end zone, and that was a little too easy.
Yeah, and it was the beginning of a big old butt whooping for the Saints, except for that second quarter where the Saints suddenly came to life and then quickly went dormant again for the rest of the game. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman, joined now by Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
Mondays are tough around here.
Trying to be positive, right?
Well, you try to be realistic, but when the Saints take it on the chin that badly, it's, you know, people around here are not happy on a Monday. So
it's frustrating, and it is strange. Like, you look back at that game, and it's kind of like it feels like the second quarter was played in the same alternate dimension that we played the first 2 weeks of this season in. Like, nothing of that second quarter makes sense relative to the rest of the game, just like nothing from the first 2 weeks really makes sense relative to the last 4 weeks of this
season. Yeah, that second quarter. Wait, we're running back punt returns for touchdowns. We're getting pick sixes. The offense is firing on all cylinders. But then you go to halftime, they come back, and it's the same team from the first quarter now.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's crazy. Look at that game. That, you know, it's a 51-27 blowout on the final scoreline. You go back to 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. The Saints are leading 27-24. They have the Bucs in a second and 5 scenario. You force them to throw the ball short of the sticks. Willie Gay's in perfect position to make a tackle. He just overruns it. Suddenly, 55-yard touchdown. Got defenders bouncing off Chris Godwin the whole way to the end zone. And you're behind, and you lose. That's where you kind of lost the plot in that game, right? Like, the Saints are unable to make the tackles in front of them. That's really the story. It's not like you're getting blocked. It's not like, you know, they're there. You're just not making tackles.
I wished I could grab Alante Taylor by the shoulder pads and say, wrap your arms around them. But, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, he's tough.
And you would have gotten in trouble if you did it, but, you know.
Well, with Alante, it's tough because I know he was dealing with a shoulder issue. So I do wonder how much of that was limiting him, and maybe some of the tackling for him was driven by that. You know, he did leave the game late in the first half. Came back, played through it, but would not be surprised if he's on the injury report this week and you're talking about, hey, is he going to be available for Thursday?
And he wasn't alone. Nobody was seemingly wanting to make tackles. I mean, I think they wanted to.
I don't want to single him out there because I know he was playing through something, and who knows. I thought he actually was one of the players that played well in terms of making some impact plays. But he seemed to be
in all the right places at the right times, but tackling was the real challenge there. So.
No, you can't win games that way. It's just you got to make the plays out in front of you. And, that game, it was a recipe for disaster the second you allowed them to go up 14-0. And it wasn't, it's tough. You look at a rookie quarterback in Spencer Rattler, and he didn't do anything wrong. He threw it to his star receiver. His star receiver got hit in the head, got concussed, dropped the ball. That's returned for a touchdown. And, that was a game that I felt like going into it, if you were able to get out to a lead, you knew you were going to go in there with a plan, and you felt like, hey, I think Spencer can execute this plan that we give him. Once the Bucs are able to kind of see that plan, adjust to that plan, I don't think that he's necessarily going to be able to adjust with them in the way you might need him to kind of win a duel in the second half. I think the only recipe you had to win that game was to get out in front, was to play on your terms and force the Bucs to kind of abandon their script a little bit. That's what happened when they lost to the Broncos at home a couple weeks ago. The Broncos came out, hit them in the mouth early, got a lead, and the Bucs kind of had to bail on a lot of the things they wanted to do, and they lost the game, 26-7 at home. And that's what the Saints needed to do, but they just weren't able to do it. Instead, they were the team who had to rally. They did rally, but it sure felt like they kind of shot all the bullets in their gun in that first half, and they just had nothing left for that second half. And it's frustrating because you look at Spencer's day, and I don't think he played that badly. I really don't. I mean,
no, and a lot of people were really positive about him. I mean, he threw two interceptions, but especially early before the defense kind of figured him out, he was having a great day.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that the plan with him was limited, and that kind of hurt you. And it's like, hey, that's the consequence of being in a short week. All of a sudden, you have to come up with a new plan, and you don't have enough time to do it. Meanwhile, the Bucs had 10 days to go to a plan for what they felt like Clint Kubiak was going to do in this new Saint offense. And then from Monday on, they were able to plan for a rookie and try to take away what they were going to do with a rookie. And so I think what you trusted him to do in that offense was a little limited, because how could it not be? It's not like you went into Monday Night Football thinking, hey, we got a plan for next week when we're going to have a rookie quarterback. No, that hit you late.
And he definitely created plays. I mean, there were plays that should have been dead long before they were, but he was able to keep them alive, and some of them worked out really well. And there were a lot of balls that were dropped. So that made it difficult for the rookie when he is hitting some receivers really well, and either because of good defense or for whatever other reasons. Some guys you never expect to drop balls were dropping balls yesterday that should have been catches. And so that was frustrating for fans as well.
Yeah, I don't think that's completely independent of the quarterback. I do think he has some work to do on touch throws, right? Like there was a throw to Cedric Wilson that like he 100% should catch, but it also doesn't need to be rifled in there like it's coming out of a howitzer cannon. It's just a touch throw that you need to get out there. There was a couple throws to Alvin. The thing with Alvin that I'm curious about is he was dealing with a hand injury during the week that we never really got a lot of information about. And when you see Alvin dropping passes like that, A, you wonder, hey, are these getting thrown a little too harder than they need to be in terms of, like, you just want to get him the ball, let him make an easy catch and go. But was that hand injury affecting him? I don't know. Either way, that's something that I think a young quarterback, especially when you're that fired up in your first start, you're just trying to get the ball there and maybe you're rifling it in a little more. So I think that's something he does need to work on. But no, I mean
he had to be excited. He had to be amped up. His first NFL start, he looked like he was in command of everything. And so, yeah, he may have been putting a little extra on it just because, well, it's his first NFL start.
Right. And, the scrambling is tough because you want him to feel like, hey, I can extend plays, I can scramble. I do feel like at this point in his career, he relies on that a little bit too much. There was a couple plays that, he created something out of nothing. He got a first down, and that's something that he brings to this equation that Derek Carr really doesn't. But there were points where it felt like he got a little happy feet. There were times it's like, hey, the pocket's there. You just got to trust it, kind of move around in it, keep your eyes downfield and create something. And, he did this in camp. He did this in the preseason. Sometimes I think he just kind of takes off a little bit too early, and you hurt your chances at making big plays downfield that way. It's something that I'm not going to criticize a rookie for more so than just point out, because it's something that as a young quarterback in the NFL, you learn in real time how to do that. The interception targeting Rashid, you know, it's a good example of that's probably a throw he gets away with in college. Like, I don't think it was necessarily a terrible throw. Yes, he underthrew it a little bit. But, I mean, Zion McCollum goes up and makes a fantastic play on that ball, something that I don't think you probably see in college. And if he makes that throw 9 times out of 10, you might – or if he makes that throw 10 times, you might complete that 7, 8 times. It was that good of a play on the ball. But it's just the type of thing that, hey, you got to be a little bit more precise with that throw in the NFL than maybe you had to be in college. You know, there is a safety kind of crashing, so you can't just throw it straight downfield, but you probably lead him a little bit more downfield to the sideline, and that's a big catch in a moment where it was a 4-point game. You go down, you score there. Maybe that whole thing plays out a little bit differently. Instead, it's kind of a momentum shift. The Bucks get the turnover. They go down, score a touchdown. That game kind of felt over at that point. But that's the type of thing. That's why going with a rookie in a game you feel like we can't afford to lose is tough, because those are the type of things that you have to do. You have to learn those things. It's not going to be, hey, you put the rookie in there and he just naturally understands the speed of the game, how you need to operate in these pressure scenarios. You learn those things. You know, Derek Carr is an 11-year veteran, right?
Absolutely. And you kind of got the feel that, you know, here's a guy who's been working as the third-string quarterback. He hasn't had a lot of time with the first-string receivers, and you felt like maybe the timing was just a little off. Some of them were a little underthrown where he could have led the receivers more or whatever, but he had great success with a guy like Bub Means, because maybe he's thrown Bub Means more balls, huh?
Oh, I mean, yeah, that's not a coincidence. Those two feel very comfortable, you know, throwing to each other. I would bet that Bub has probably caught more passes from Spencer Rattler during camp, during practice, than anybody else on this Saints roster. And you know, you look for silver linings, right? Like, you, in a game like that, you can't just be completely negative. You do want to try to pull out the things that went well. And I thought Bub, you know, he looked like an NFL receiver in that game. He had one target in week one. He hadn't really been heard from since. But he didn't look like a guy who was overwhelmed. He looked like a guy who's physically capable of playing at the NFL level. He's built, he's big, and he was making some contested catches. So, you know, I would be expecting, if you're looking for a fantasy waiver wire ad, he's going to be a popular guy, because you watch just the connection they have and the comfortability of Spencer throwing him the ball in big moments, like 2 first down conversions, a touchdown. He had another first down conversion on a second down, all kind of tight window. Close area throws. I was impressed with Bub.
Yeah, and I think that you nailed it there. They've been playing catch all season with each other because, well, they're, you know, at the bottom of the barrel. So now they're in prime time, and they're showing that familiarity is valuable. All right, we're talking with Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak here on WWL. Speaking of Bub.
Rattler to throw, looking, now throws to the end zone, and that is going to be caught, and that is Bub Means, the rookie on the far side, gets his first touchdown as he beats Tyreek Thunderbird from Appalachian State. Good play action, waited, bang.
Bang, indeed.
It's your football, it's your first touchdown.
Yeah, it was his first, and hopefully not his last. When we come back, are we sure that Rattler's getting the start Thursday night against the Broncos? We'll ask Jeff Nowak that. And is Jeff surprised that the Saints are favored in this game, according to the odds makers? We'll find out coming up next. We do have a traffic note we got to pass along very quickly, though. Just got a text. I was wondering, I was seeing some trouble on the Crescent City Connection heading from the East Bank to the West Bank, and we just got a text from a listener who said there's an 18-wheeler laying on its side on the West Bank Expressway, heading toward the West Bank Expressway from the Pontchartrain Expressway. So if you're heading from downtown New Orleans to the West Bank, we got an overturned truck on the Crescent City Connection. Traffic is starting to back up quickly. All right, traffic is now backed up all the way from the middle of the Crescent City Connection toward the West Bank all the way to the I-10 split, because we have an overturned 18-wheeler, according to an eyewitness, on the Crescent City Connection heading from the East Bank to the West Bank. So if you've got to cross the river, Huey P. or the I-310 are going to be your options, or just take the ferry, because right now you can't get across the river.
Rattler will be out of a shotgun, has 2 receivers to the top, 2 to the bottom as he takes the snap. Looks, has plenty of time, now rolls to his right, and he'll bring it down. 40, 45, picks up the first down. Rattler still on his feet, and the crowd is on their feet as Spencer Rattler does it with his feet. First down for New Orleans.
one of the highlights from a game that was very challenging for Saints fans, and I'm sure for members of the team, and I know for Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak to watch. Jeff, do we know that Spencer Rattler will be the starter Thursday night when Sean Payton and the Denver Broncos come to town? Because when they announced he was starting this game, they said it was because he fit best, they thought, in this game against the Buccaneers. Do we have any official word yet?
Yeah, I mean, barring, you know, a recovery for Derek Carr that is unexpected, right? Like, he is expected to miss two games. I wouldn't be surprised if that maybe had been one game if they played on Sunday. In a short week, it's tough to know, hey, how much different is it really going to be 3 days removed? But Dennis Allen was asked after the game if his plan was to stick with Spencer Rattler. He said yes. So I would expect that you would. I think it's going to be difficult enough to come up with a plan for this game regardless, on such a short week, that it would probably be a lot more difficult to then change midstream and say, actually, we're going to go with Jake now. Let's try to make a plan around what he does well. I think the goal would be, hey, we figured some things out in this game. We can build on that and go forward and maybe add some wrinkles to have some more answers, because I think that was the issue. I think you had some answers early on. The Bucs figured out what you were doing, and then you didn't have answers for what they were doing in the second half. Well, now you know how teams are going to react and how Spencer's going to react to the teams changing their plan on him. So I think that's what you're going to do. But, yeah, I expect Spencer to get another shot at it.
Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak, are you surprised that the odds makers have the Saints, a 1.5-point favorite, heading into this Thursday night game after what we saw Sunday in the Superdome?
I'm curious to see how this line moves throughout the week. I would imagine a lot of money ends up going in on Sean Payton and the Broncos, and just because, hey, this kind of what happened in this game is going to kind of get talked about and talked about and talked about, and the confidence level is going to wane. But I think they're 1.5 right now. I think they started at 3 and it's gone down to 1.5 already. And typically home field is worth 3 points on the line. So when you look at a team that's a 1.5 favorite at home, they're really kind of looked at as the underdog in that game. I think the Saints should feel confident in this game. I don't think the Broncos are particularly good either. You're talking about a rookie quarterback coming in and Bo Nix. They got kind of taken to task by the Chargers this week. So, you know, I think this is the Saints need to get right in this game, and it's a matchup that they should feel like they can handle, at least on offense. Now, defensively for the Broncos, they're a problem. But I don't think you're going to see 600 yards of offense from Denver in this game, I hope. If you do, then that's a problem. But I like the Saints' chances in this game, and they just need to kind of just get their feet on the ground and play football. You know, it's been frustrating to watch. But if they can turn this around and win a game and get back to 3-4 with a 10-day break and then kind of figure things out from there, I like it. I think you're okay. If you can't, then it's a problem. So I don't know whether they should be favored or not, but I do know they have to win.
Yeah, we're getting into that real must-win territory. Jeff, thank you so much. We look forward to hearing you on the sidelines Thursday night and reading everything that you produce for us at WWL.com. Thanks for joining us here on WWL.
For sure, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Jeff Nowak here on WWL. Yeah, man, if they can get some fundamentals solved, you know, tackling and catching, I think the Saints have a great chance of winning this game. 11:56, Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. We have a serious problem on the Crescent City Connection heading from the East Bank to the West Bank. We've been telling you about it for the last 45 minutes, but apparently a large number of emergency vehicles have been trying to access that crash scene and are having trouble getting through the backed up traffic. We're told by one eyewitness that an 18-wheeler overturned on the Crescent City Connection heading from the East Bank to the West Bank, crossing the Mississippi River. Ambulances have been responding along with police and fire vehicles. We don't know the full extent of the details of what happened, but from a traffic standpoint, we can tell you that traffic is at a dead stop from the West Bank all the way across the bridge to the East Bank and all the way back to the split at the I-10 near the Superdome. So if you've got to get to the West Bank or really anywhere in the CBD, you do not want to take the Pontchartrain Expressway heading towards the Crescent City Connection. It is at a dead stop. So your options to cross the river, obviously, are the ferry, the Huey P. Long, and the I-310. We'll get you more information as it becomes available here on WWL. James, thanks for calling. You are on WWL. What's on your mind, James?
A lot. Anybody remember Armistice Day?
What about Armistice Day?
We no longer call it Armistice Day, do we?
No, you don't find many people celebrating that. Today is technically Columbus Day, but it's only observed in 16 states. Do you think we should continue to celebrate Columbus Day?
Let's see if I can do this for shortly. We should.
You got about 30 seconds, James. So
let me see if I can get it in. We should not celebrate it, but we should remember it. We should recognize it. And the one thing I want to definitely disagree with you guys on is history is fact. It should be something that should be observable and should be able to go back.
Who are you disagreeing with, James?
Well, you said earlier that history is you didn't say it was malleable, but it kind of moves. Facts don't change.
No, but they do, because the facts that we thought we knew a generation ago about Columbus are not what has come to light and what we know now. So history should not be, it should not be malleable, but as we learn more, my question was, should we celebrate Columbus as a hero after learning he never made it to North America or South America, for that matter? The closest he got was the islands.
And, just let me talk.
Well, you're accusing me of something. I'm going to defend myself.
Right, but the point I'm trying to make is that facts should be observable, should not be subjective. They should be based on original occurrences. Like right now, we got a lie going on that somebody won an election. If he wins a new election, he's going to change history. He's going to say the fact was I won the first time.
Thank you, James. I appreciate the call. We're out of time, but to answer my specific question, I think you make a good point that Columbus Day should be properly portrayed, and the facts as we know them to be true should be shared. There's no doubt about that. We'll continue the conversation. We're getting Guy Williams in here up next. Find out what's going on with inflation, interest rates, the real estate market, and much more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.